Please be advised that this program is being monitored to ensure compliance with Canadian broadcast codes and regulation.
They would be happy to put a warning on an album that said explicit lyrics, parental guidance.
Let me ask you this. If we have categories and labels and rating systems for movies, why are you opposed to a similar rating system for records?
Well, if a person is hired as an actor for a film, whatever they rate the film doesn't hurt the actor as a person. He is a hired hand and he's pretending. If a person makes an album and he's written the song or he's performing the song and his name is on the album and his picture is on the album, if you rate the album, you're rating the person and you apply a stigma to that individual, and that's not fair.
As a regular radio listener, I feel I must protest most strongly as often as possible. Yours sincerely, Brigadier General Titfield Thunderbolt, MC, GPO, PVC, DSO, and Looney.
How many times has this happened to you?
Darn! 4 more years of a Republican president.
If you're a Democrat, you're probably thinking it's about to happen again.
That's it. We are moving to Canada.
This year, don't just talk about moving to Canada. Do it! Introducing the Expatriate Liberal Intellectuals Theocracy Escape Plan, or ELITE.
That's us.
Thanks to the Canadian government's ELITE plan, leaving those red state yahoos behind has never been easier. The moment you cross the border, an ELITE plan concierge will greet you with your very own socialized medicine card and Canadian transition kit. Just imagine all the benefits of an ELITE life in Canada. Gay marriage is legal everywhere. Need some medical marijuana? No problem. That's legal too.
I love pot.
Me too.
Abortion? Heck, we'll even pay for it. Applying for the ELITE plan is easy, and you're automatically approved if you work in any of these professions. Hollywood entertainer, high-tech entrepreneur, hedge fund manager, university professor, journalist, trial lawyer.
When I was an American, traveling to Europe used to be so embarrassing. Every place I went, people would trash Americans. I used to even pretend I was a Canadian. Now I don't have to pretend.
So, affluent American elites, what are you waiting for?
Doesn't it get kind of cold in Canada?
Yeah.
Our lavish social programs keep you warm all winter long. Do you like liberal public broadcasting? In Canada, the state pays. No pledge drives, no tote bags.
What about evolution?
Unlike in America, most Canadians believe in it.
Okay, honey, let's really do this thing.
Canada, here we come!
Supplies of new elite citizenships are limited. Avoid the rush on November 5th. Call today!
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
Now, remember, without realness, we is nothing.
Life is the most precious gift that Jah has given us.
It just goes to show it. I should act my age.
And the stakes are too high.
Bad work. Bad work. I mean, how dare they? How dare they?
Yes, how dare they? Or how dare me? I'm Greg Duffel. This is the International Connection. Oh, I saw lots of dead people this week. I'll tell you all about it later.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you bet I will.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Some people love this theme, some people hate it. I heard at least one person hates it. Hi, Roma. Gosh, we had calls coming in right off the bat this morning, as soon as we weren't on the air. Hey, I'm going to go close my door. It's open. Actually, I'm going to introduce someone to you. He's a new listener just this week, and you're on the air. You're on the air? Hello?
Hi, Greg.
Oh, who is this? Is this Dave, too?
No, this is Daniel, too.
Daniel, too.
Daniel, too. Glad to be appointed to your network. I know it's strange to be sounding like Dave, too, and Andy, too. But I could go like this, be Daniel, too. What do you prefer?
Well, let me think. I think I'd prefer Daniel, too. What was the last one, the higher-pitched one? What was that?
Higher-pitched Daniel. Higher-pitched Daniel, too. Great.
No, I'd go with the other one. That's a little less annoying.
Okay, I'm going over to Bob Dobbs, too.
Okay, Bob Dobbs, too. Welcome, Bob Dobbs. You're here this morning, direct from Hawaii. And, you know, I was doing some work today. You know, I've talked to you over the last few weeks, or last week, about some kind of a theme that would introduce you.
Yes.
Now that you're here, this is what I'm going to do, okay? We'll try this one out. We'll do different things on any week that you're here.
As long as it's Zappa.
Here he is, direct from Hawaii. It's Bob Dobbs.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe.
That's us.
Here in this great hall of justice.
Oh, yes.
Are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
Yep, that's Bob and Greg Duffel. And you know this is a hall of justice here at CKLM. Right, Bob?
I like that joke, but I have a question.
Yeah, oh, we're battling dinosaurs. Here we are. We're
the Wonder Twins with their space monkey, Bleak.
We're the Wonder Twins, and we got a space monkey.
Dedicated to truth,
yeah.
Justice,
uh-huh.
And peace.
Yes.
For all mankind.
Right. And don't forget womankind, too.
Greg.
How was that? How was that, Bob? Well, how's that for a theme for the two of us, really?
Well, that fits more Daniel 1. you told me, I said I wanted R&B. You said, well, that's too old-fashioned, and I started to say, at least if it's Zappa occasionally, but that's kind of corny. I thought you wanted to be up to date.
No. I don't want to be up to date. I want to be corny. In fact, here is, now, for this particular segment, that was the opening segment. Then we would go to commercials, but we don't have any commercials. Then we'd go to this to introduce you properly. Here we go.
Far beyond the boundaries of the Milky Way, in the uncharted void of deep space, an incredible fifth dimension of space and time lies parallel to the universe that we know. This interesting interstellar warp, which holds the most sinister and ruthless criminal in the galaxy, is the infamous Phantom Zone.
There. That's
now,
you, Bob.
That's it, because I was going to say I disagree with the principles in the first opener you played.
So this one's
there.
Is this one better?
I'm not for justice and peace, am I?
Not really. No, but and actually this week, I had a very tumultuous week, actually a very tumultuous day on, when was it? It was on Wednesday, I guess, and it was here at this very Hall of Justice, so-called by some. And so there were the forces of saying there was no justice and the forces that said there were or might be. And there was a battle, a pitch battle between the two. And in that battle, your host, yours truly, was defamed. And how I was defamed was that I was called fake left. Now, there, these people who called me fake left, they are under the illusion that they are the real left. So there are the fake left and real left forces. But they alone create that dynamic. But that's exactly what happens in the rest of the world. Everybody thinks that someone else who harbors some of their views, but then if they're not exactly in line with what they think, then they are the fake whatever, fill in the blank. Like John McCain wasn't really a conservative. He was a fake conservative. So I'm now, just so you listeners know, according to this group of ex officios, I am the fake left. So what you've been listening to all these years, according to them, is the fake left. And what I didn't understand at this meeting, I'm just a member of this organization. I'm a programmer here too. Somehow they attributed to me almost superhero energy values, powers, and abilities far beyond those of even management. That I could do things that no one else could do. Which, you know, it sort of felt, made me feel good in a sense, because it meant that they kind of looked up to me as an authority figure. But then again, I felt bad about it because I don't even want to be authority figures to these people. They're nothing to me.
Greg, didn't you tell me that the different factions within the real left and the real anarchists were appealing to you to support their little agenda, like there were agendas?
Yeah, they want me to support their agenda unthinkingly, because that's what solidarity evidently is all about, where you just go blindly into their world because they hold certain supposed left-wing values. You've got revisionist communists involved, you've got liberals, you got all manner of this sort of wishy-washy left somehow wanting me to be part of their scene, to drawing me into their scene. And to be drawn into their scene, you have to take on all kinds of bad behavior, past bad behavior, and one has to assume present and future bad behavior, because they're the left, and I have to assume this. I didn't get it. I don't get it. I've been thinking about it for a while. I don't even know why I even give it even a moment's thought, but I do. It's my tortured life.
It's the crux of the matter. It is the micro-tribalism that a radio environment encourages. It happened in Germany in the 20s and 30s among the different factions of the Gestapo and the Nazis.
Oh, Hitler was a radio man.
Yeah.
I thought, I don't have that handy, that particular clip of McLuhan, but I thought I'd do my best impersonation of it. You know, Hitler was a radio man.
Excellent.
Thank
because
you.
That's what you're a radio man. And then there's, and you apparently are seen as independently wealthy or something.
Yes.
Tending to be a capitalist, and you're putting on the whole ideology that's necessary under a tribal radio environment.
Yes, I've heard once some famous capitalist say, or a rich person, there's nothing worse than a rich socialist.
Yeah, that's worse than the most evil Rumpelstiltskin in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is extreme. It tends towards the real. And the whole world of radio and information is a kind of simulation, even though the brains think it's real. Our brain thinks it's real.
Now, there's something I have to do here now, Bob, that just to explain a little bit. I was accused of being a hypocrite. It's great. I love being called hypocrite by super hypocrites.
How are they super hypocrites?
Well, their past behavior, and the ones who maybe, some of them go, oh, but I wasn't around then. I wasn't around then. But that's like saying that you don't want to go into a history class and not wanting to learn about anything that was in the newspaper yesterday. It's they have no interest in learning about things, about which means that they can't actually begin to see things from your point of view at all, because they're not willing to even accept what happened to you or what went on. They just are here now, and the cause seems good at the moment.
Right, and it's not just that you have to have their point of view. Isn't it also you have to go to their meetings, like the same records, go to the same clubs? Isn't
yeah.
there a whole environment that you have to be part of?
Right. When they drink beer, you've got to drink beer.
Yeah. And you got to drink it the way they drink it.
Yeah. So, now, they're in some kind of a dispute. Now, I've been in a dispute before, and I didn't take the same tactics that they did. But that's okay. They can do what they want, I suppose. They just have to live with whatever they do, like I do, like everybody does. Now, they say, why aren't you talking about these things on the air? Well, I'll tell you something. When we were removed from the station by these same people, the people who were appealing to me, their allies, the ones who actually got rid of us don't actually appeal to me. But, I mean, they don't come to me and ask me a favor or anything. They're not going to lower themselves to that point. But they get their surrogates to do it, the ones who weren't here at the time, who can claim abject ignorance. So they're wanting me to come in, but then when they say, but you haven't said anything on the air about our dispute. And I'm thinking back, no one talked about us being gotten rid of on the air, and I never expected anybody to. I never asked any programmer here to do that. Because what if they got fired? I'd feel badly. But
did you make these points to them when you were having the argument?
Well, actually, what I said was that I'm following a handbook. Now, just interestingly enough, this handbook that we have to follow. I'm holding in my hand now a huge programmer handbook. And it has all kinds of stuff in it that evidently we're supposed to follow. A lot of it, well, you know, I won't comment on it. But I can say that there is one. I think that's fair enough to say. Now, let me read what part of it says. Negatively criticizing other CKLN volunteers, its staff or board of directors, this is forbidden, by the way. This is not something that you can do. They don't tell you, hey, go ahead, do it. This is something you can't do. It should be avoided. It doesn't actually say you can't do it, but it just said it should be avoided. Negatively criticizing other CKLN volunteers, its staff or board of directors, community supporters of CKLN, or Ryerson employees, faculty members, or students on air. Now, that would be about, in the city of Toronto, that would account for about 23 or 24,000 people. Some of those people are involved in media, broadcast media, print media. So, in other words, let's say there's an article written in the campus newspaper here, and I want to comment about it, but I can't comment negatively about it, or I should avoid it, but it's unclear on what terms you should avoid it and what terms you should. So anyway, it's or shouldn't. So this guy's saying, why aren't you talking about this on the air? And I'm going, I can't do it. And furthermore, these rules were written by people who are in your camp. they're ex officios. They wrote this stuff.
Yeah, and didn't they go on air and criticize you guys?
When we were here.
Yeah.
When we were here. And, I mean, I don't have a problem with being criticized, actually. I've got no problem with it. Because we're broadcasters. We're not an insular organization. We're broadcasters. We're going out over the air. And views and opinions are being made. And I don't see any reason why my views can't be criticized or lauded or whatever. I mean, is it only that we can say good things about something?
There's the tribalism.
But at any rate, talk about hypocrisy. Again, this person who's telling me this has no idea of the history or doesn't want to even learn, doesn't want to listen, just takes it from square one. But this person is sort of the representative of these other people who are, you know, who I would view as being hypocrites, but I'm not going and pointing fingers at them and calling them that. So this, it was a whole scene around this place on Wednesday. And
Greg, what's interesting is that the International Connection has a stigma because these issues that you're talking about started with Bob Marshall and the International Connection and Chris Dudney back in the Adam Vaughan era. And that's the history these people don't know.
Right. Even I mean, you've told me about it, but I wouldn't know about it if I didn't know you. Yeah, it goes back a long way. This show has always been the bane of the management, it seems, or at a certain point. It's always a problem because it's talking about things that evidently can't be talked about in polite company.
Right, anyway, and also, it didn't carry a tribal party line. It presented different tribal party lines. Mae Brussel, Lynn LaRouche, Sherman Scully, Dr. Beter, Marsha McLuhan. It was a range of things. Therefore, they couldn't figure out what Bob Marshall represented.
Right. There were different views being presented, and you just took them in. These people, I think, I guess they call themselves leftists. Some of them even go so far as to call themselves communists. And, of course, there are different types of communists, as we've gone into here. It's all factionalized and split up, and sometimes they come together. But they don't want a broadcast outlet that isn't telling people what to think. They really don't want to just present information sometimes and let people mull it over and come to their own conclusions. They want to tell you what it is and actually manufacture it in such a way that the audience is forced to take their opinion. Or it's the only one. They're in a vacuum when they're listening to this stuff. And in fact, a lot of the programs, the people who did this kind of programming in the past, they never took a call, never, on their programs because they didn't ever want the audience to say anything because that would interrupt or maybe confuse their particular outlook. It always had to be radio in a vacuum. And so that gives me a perfect segue to say that we have now our phone lines back, and they are 416-595-1655. You can call in, and I know it's difficult for you to relate to what goes on in the difficulties of doing this radio program and surviving from 1 week to the next. Amongst all of the factions. What I learned the other night is everybody hates us. And that's okay. I never really wanted to be loved. It's just what's interesting is that the weird dichotomy is that the audience, based on our fundraising abilities, there's an audience out there that seems to think this is valuable. And then there's a whole other audience that must think it's valuable that never gives a dime, which is okay. I mean, if you don't have the money or something, or you don't you don't want to do it, well, okay, I can't force you to do it. But the thing is that what we do know is that there are people, and thank you very much, by the way, for supporting us, supporting this program, and making some kind of statement that sometimes I don't think anybody in the past has ever really looked at seriously. Although I think they brought back Bob Marshall once. I have to think, I don't know, you won't know more about it, Bob, but was it because that it could bring in money or it was popular, the show was popular?
Yeah, like he was gone for 6 months to a year in 87. Adam Vaughan removed him, and that's when I came on the air with Mike Dyer as a guest. I never had a show, but Bob Marshall had a show, and within a year under Punam Khosla's management, he was brought back and was on for another few years.
So why do you think...
Because he could raise a reasonable amount of money.
And they were willing to tolerate that for the half hour, hour, every other week on a Sunday morning when they felt that only kooks were listening. Was that it?
Yeah, well, you were listening. You were
I was one of the big kooks out there.
Turned out to be the archivist.
Yeah. And the new host of the and the the former host. I'm the former host and the new host of the show. Yeah, I was in And just, you know, you might think that by reading you that bit about the handbook that was written by a previous administration, and a lot of it you can tell is written about this show. You can tell that they're going from the experience of this program. They've tailored the handbook to preclude us from doing things, and that they didn't like. That we never heard any complaint from the audience about. It was that the management didn't like it, and it still exists today. This handbook carries on in another administration. It reminds me of when I was living in France in the mid 70s, and I was on the metro, the subway there in Paris. And I was waiting for a subway train to come along, and I was wandering around the platform, and I saw this poster at the end of the platform, and I got up close to it, and as I neared it, I noticed there was a Nazi symbol on it. And it wasn't a Nazi symbol that someone had inked in by themselves, like graffiti. It was actually printed onto this official document, and it was from the Nazi era during the 40s when the Nazis took over Paris, took over France, and it was some kind of proclamation, a rule about behavior on the subway. And I was reading it, and it still had the Nazi symbol on it, and I thought, you know, I mean, not everything the Nazis did. They had to do normal things, too, right? They weren't... it wasn't all the nefarious things. They had to govern just normal activity in a city or in a country to govern it. And I thought... I sort of look at some parts of this handbook in a similar way, that it's left over from another administration, you know. And when that went back years later, it was gone. All those posters had been finally ripped down. But that was, what, 30 years after World War II. Okay, we got another call on the line, and you're on the air.
Yo, what's up, man?
Hey, man.
Hey, is the Dobbs on the show?
Oh, yeah, he's right here.
Aloha. Where is he?
Hello.
Can you hear that, Bob?
Yes.
Oh, I can't hear him.
He's
going nowhere now.
Yeah, I know. It's great, huh?
I can hear him.
Hey, I thought I heard Dan. Is Dan there?
No, he's not here. Daniel's not here. Daniel is on hiatus, pursuing other projects.
But listen, this is for you.
Pardon?
Greg Duffel?
Yes, sir.
When we was in the shower, your butt cheeks was warm.
Thanks so much for that. Yeah, I know what the reference is, but I just won't go into it. If anybody else knows the reference there, go ahead, pop culture reference, please. Please phone in and tell me.
Greg, I phoned in on 1655. Should I be on 1478?
No, for some reason, I think everything's all switched around. I don't know. It's okay. Everything's okay. Everything's okay.
But they can't hear me. I can hear them.
I know. You could hear them, and I did an interview last night that I'm probably going to run a bit later here today, and I was
I don't think that. I don't think that person had anything to say.
No. So, but that happens. If you have something to say, 416-595-1655, we've got that phone number back. You can get rid of the other number and phone that one if you so wish.
Great.
I'm on the phone with Mr. Bob Dobbs. He's my fill-in co-host for this morning.
Yeah, let me go through the history of the International Connection, referencing the host and the different kind of hosts I've had in terms of following a party line.
Okay, go ahead.
Bob Marshall started the show in August 84, and he basically took on the Illuminati and the Nazis, basing his resources and sources on Linda LaRouche, Dr. Beter, and Mabe Russell. And he was on until 89, 90, 91, somewhere in there. And then Rick Lines came on, and he ended up in Ireland. And I would say that...
I've had him on the show. I've had Rick Lines on the program. I mean, I know him. He works for the Irish Penal Reform Trust. He's involved with the rights of inmates and so on. And on Prisoner's Justice Day, I guess now two years ago, right before we were gotten rid of, he came into the station and we did an interview with him.
Yes, I think I heard that. Now, he was, if he's in Ireland, he's taking on the Vatican and the Jesuits.
Mm.
And I don't know if he was Catholic himself, but after him was Wayne Morris in the mid-90s.
Well, it kind of went from Wayne Morris to Rick Lyons because Wayne went away, and then back to Wayne Morris when he came back from Africa.
Yeah, then Wayne did a long stretch and did the Immortal series on Operation Mind Control or MK Ultra and that stuff,
right,
which C-Count still offers, right?
I think if you twist their arm, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The point is that he did battle with the Freemasons or British intelligence as opposed to the Vatican, even though one could say the Jesuits were a mind control operation, but the Freemasons did it through more industrial aspects and brought in Fabian socialism and reformed the prisons and labor laws and all that stuff that we consider the liberal agenda, reinforcing the community. And then what was interesting is that you and Daniel came on and you would admitted or stated that you were a Stalinist. So you actually took on and represented the Bolsheviks. Now, what I'm saying is that Bob Marshall worked with the Illuminati while complaining about them, me being a member of the Illuminati. Rick Lyons took on the Jesuits while working within their structure. Wayne Morris, as I know personally, has become very infatuated with New Age stuff, which was created by the Freemasons. And you guys are blatant Stalinists and work for the Bolshevik legacy. So we've had four phases of taking on the four aspects of secret intelligence networks over the last 500 years. You have the Illuminati, the Jesuits, the Freemasons, and the Bolsheviks. Now, in this new agenda, we're explaining and dealing with the multiplicity of our CKLN legacy or International Connection legacy. That's what I represent if you want to tag my input on the show, if it has any influence.
Well, I'm going to go to a call right now, and you're on the air.
Play Pet Shop Boy for me.
Yes?
Pet Shop Boys.
Yes?
Play for me again.
Right?
Like before you play Pet Shop Boy, you sing like a Pet Shop Boy.
Yes?
Thank you.
You're welcome. I sing like a Pet Shop Boy. That guy. See, we've got the when you was into shower, your butt cheeks was warm, and then we've got you sing like a Pet Shop Boy.
I could hardly hear that. What was he saying?
He says I sing like a Pet Shop Boy.
Did you like the Pet Shop Boys?
I do like the Pet Shop Boys. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned that. I remember that. You said that over the years, occasionally on the show, right?
Yes.
So this person's a regular listener. They know.
I guess so, but I think that they're basing it on, I sang a song a few weeks ago about Sarah Palin, and
yes,
they are basing that on that. Some people called that a deal breaker. In other words, they felt that that was impetus to just turn the program off altogether. Some people just wanted to listen to hear the Pet Shop Boy resonance.
Right, and also I think he's making fun of the fact that you have to be a certain way in Gregland, and it's like the tribalism.
You think so?
Yeah, he's saying you sing like Pet Shop Boys. You're identified with an icon, a radio movement, a industry style, a timbre. When they were flavor of the month, they dominate the airways, their mood. That mood atmosphere is what he's referring to. And so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. He's satirizing the people you're complaining about. They identify you not as an individual but with some media icon, media legacy.
Well, let's take another call, shall we? You're on the air.
Hey, man, do you know what a Pet Shop Boy actually is?
No, I don't. No.
It's a term in the gay community.
Yeah.
For someone who stuffs small rodents in their butt.
Really?
Yeah, that's where that word comes from.
Well, there you go. That proves my point.
I mean the gerbil type thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't want to make it singular to any rodent.
Oh, okay. It could be any type of small rodent.
That's right.
Or if you really wanted to be adventurous, a large rodent, like a beaver or something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Thanks for that.
That proves my point, Greg, that he's talking about a sub-tribe, the gay community, a micro-tribe, and their language and their code. That's what we're talking about here. Radio fosters microtribalism. I mean, one person who would understand this is Lord Selector. Remember him?
Oh, yeah. I remember him.
Yeah.
Would he understand that kind of tribalism?
Yes, he represents it. He represents reggae tribalism, I think.
Hmm. Well, it was an interesting week. All I can say is that met up with past friends and foes and had that little head-on battle, and then everybody dispersed, went off into their corners.
They went into other media environments. They went into other aspects of their lives.
Right.
And right. And to me, if CKLN is losing listeners or is marginalized, it's represented by those old categories and sub-micro-tribalism. The thing is, aren't young kids not really that way nowadays with their MySpaces? They really represent individualism, hyper-virtual, fake individualism.
Yeah.
In their consumer lifestyles. It contains all the tribal environments, the tribal iconography, like on their MySpace, they have to list all their favorite movies, their favorite records, their favorite gurus, the people they don't like. They have to list all this stuff, but they're sitting on top of it. International Connection represents that sensibility. I think it's always been ahead of its time as we moved into a virtual society, and that could be criticized of CKL, of International Connection. It does represent individualism or detachment and a kind of irony. And if we're in troubled times, maybe we're supposed to get together, unite, throw away our differences, and work towards a common good or a collective anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, all that hierarchy. So we are in the middle of this dilemma on International Connection.
You think there's a dilemma, is there?
Oh, yeah, I think...
there's always a dilemma, though.
Beg your pardon?
There's always a dilemma.
That's right.
If it isn't one thing, it's another. I was listening. You were talking about how about radio, and then about comparing it to MySpace and the individualism there. The other day, I came home, and the woman that I cohabitate with said was very irritated, and that's not uncommon. But this irritation was with the radio. And the radio was generally set on this station in the kitchen, on all the time, low. You know, if I heard something I was interested in, I'd turn it up. And she was in the kitchen, and she was there for a little while, and she just couldn't take it any longer. She needed something else. You know, she needed that feeling that she had to have control over the radio, that just being passive and listening to whatever was pumping out, just she couldn't take it. Whatever was on the radio, it just wasn't suiting her. She needed to individualize it. But she became frustrated because she was going through the dial trying to find something and couldn't. And what I found interesting about her dilemma was that she posed to me after she had gone through the entire radio dial in vain. She says, "Find me the CBC." Find me the CBC.
This is CBC Radio.
Yeah, she needed CBC Radio badly. And I said to her, I don't even know where it is, frankly. I mean, I kind of know it's in the middle of the dial. And it comes in strong because it's a huge signal. So I'm wandering around and I think, okay, I think this is it. And she's listening to it and she goes, that's not it. Because she's of this mindset that I think runs across a lot of Canadians, that somehow the CBC is this mass middle ground that will please them at any given time. And so from that moment to today, it's been about a week or so, week and a half, the radio's been locked on the CBC, and it is a horrifying experience. I'm listening to it, and it's, you can tell that they've got more people involved to produce this, and they have good people doing jobs that they probably resent doing because they're just so beneath their abilities in some cases. For instance, Robert Fisher, who I think is did some very good work on television at Global. I've met him, seems like a very nice man, and could do some interesting work on the radio. He stuck just doing the news and occasionally chiming in with a quip on occasion. It's beneath him, really. And then I tuned in at another time, and they were having a long discussion about the ratings on 30 Rock. This Tina Fey trying to compare whether Sarah Palin, her making these appearances, caricaturing Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live, are going to translate as ratings for this 30 Rock, which evidently they hold as high up in esteem. And they said, but the ratings aren't there. It's too intellectual for people. And it's this long discussion on the CBC. And then they get so lazy that they start playing clips of whole bits of Tina Fey impersonating Sarah Palin on the CBC. And I'm thinking, well, why don't they just record a bunch of television and run it on the CBC? It's just, the stuff is just awful for the most part, from what I've heard. And great. why wouldn't young people want to just fashion their own radio or television as they see fit on the internet? And that's what YouTube and MySpace do. Because
that's right. Greg, I want to say that when I moved to L.A. and New York in 93 and was no longer in Canada, that was the liberating aspect of leaving Canada. I didn't have to listen to CBC. It wasn't there as an oppressive force. I really felt liberated. Now, I could have listened to CBC on the internet if I was a devoted Canadian and wanted to stay in touch, but I used the alibi that I was in the United States and they don't cover Canada at all, so that I could claim that I didn't have to know anything about the CBC or what Canada was saying or doing through CBC. So that is the greatest feeling. You don't realize how oppressive and tribal and tiny Canada is as a mentality till you get into some place like the United States, due to its media variety in the United States. But now the internet has changed that. So these little kids, they have a whole new sensibility, and I can just see they don't like their boomer parents, they don't like their Generation X parents because they're so boring, because they're tribal. These kids are fantastic. I love their schizophrenic, quadrophrenic, indecision, antisocial, can't talk to anybody. They are great consumers.
Have you heard this Sarah Palin call that was made by these Canadian radio guys in Quebec? Have you heard about this, Bob? I was sent this by Robert, a listener who sends me some very good little clips and YouTube stuff, and here, I'll play it. I may as well, since I mentioned Sarah Palin.
This is Bexy.
Hello, Bexy.
Hi.
Hi, this is Franck Louvrier. I'm with President Sarkozy on the line for Governor Palin.
Yes, one second, please. Can you hold on one second, please?
Yeah, no problem.
So they're pretending to be Nicolas Sarkozy, the president of France, and they've managed to get through. So she's got through. They've got through to her assistant, and now they're going to try and get through to Sarah Palin.
All right, thanks. Hi, I'm going to hand the phone over to her.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to put the president on the line.
So this guy is the assistant to the president, to make it look all official, and that is the assistant to Sarah Palin. So they're communicating with each other.
Okay, he's coming to the line. Okay. This is Sarah.
Governor Palin.
Hello.
Just hold on for President Sarkozy. One moment.
Oh, it's not him yet. I always do that.
Yes, hello, Governor Palin.
So she's sort of complaining that now she's talking not to Sarkozy, but to the assistant. And then she's... So now they're talking to supposedly Nicolas Sarkozy, but it really isn't. It's a Quebec radio guy.
I'll just have people hand it to yes. Right when it's
down. Yes, hello, Mrs. Governor.
Hello, this is Sarah. How are you?
Fine, and you? This is Nicolas Sarkozy speaking. How are you?
Oh, so good. It's so good to hear you. Thank you for calling us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. We have such great respect for you, John McCain and I. We love you, and thank you for 2 minutes to talk to me.
What do you think so far, Bob?
Well, I've always liked Sarah, but I think it would be great humor.
Yeah.
If
she became vice president and then president, I think it would be fantastic because, you know, it's only a political circus meant to be absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And just imagine how the Huffington Post and all the liberal commentators and maybe, I don't know about the conservative bloggers, but the liberals and the left, the fake left, would go nuts.
No,
they'd
make
all kinds of great movies.
Do you mean fake left being me?
No. You're not even. You're nothing. You're a fake capitalist. You're a fake Bob Marshall. They haven't even got what you are. And you're a fake Bob Dobbs. You and Daniel did move the tone, timbre of International Connection towards the Mike Dyer, Bob Dobbs mixed media play. I mean,
yes.
You're a fake Mike Dyer.
Right.
Tell him that one.
2 minutes. Talk to me.
I followed your campaigns closely with my special American advisor, Johnny Hallyday, you know?
Yes. Good.
Excellent. Are you confident?
Very confident, and we're thankful that polls are showing that the race is tightening. And
well, I know very well that the campaign can be exhausting. How do you feel right now, my dear?
I feel so good. I feel like we're in a marathon, and at the very end of the marathon, you get your second wind, and you plow through the finish.
You see, I got elected in France because I'm real, and you seem to be someone who's real as well.
Yes. Yeah, Nicholas, we so appreciate this opportunity.
You know, President, one day you too.
Maybe in 8 years.
Well, I hope.
Did you hear that? Did you?
We so appreciate this opportunity.
Did you hear that when he said? Did you hear the reaction she had when he suggested that she'd be president? Listen to her again.
You know, I see you as a president one day. You too.
Maybe in 8 years.
Well, I hope for you. You know, we have a lot in common because personally, one of my favorite activities is to hunt, too.
Oh, very good. We should go hunting together.
Exactly. We could go try hunting by helicopter like you did. I never did that. Like we say in French, on pourrait tuer des bébés phoques aussi.
Well, I think we can have a lot of fun together as we're getting work done. We can kill two birds with one stone that way.
I just love killing those animals. Mm-mm. Take away a life. That is so fun. I'd really love to go as long as we don't bring Vice President Cheney.
No, I'll be a careful shot. Yes.
Yes. You know, we have a lot in common also because except that from my house, I can see Belgium. That's kind of less interesting than you.
Well, see, we're right next door to other countries that we all need to be working with, yes.
Some people said in the last days, and I thought that was mean, that you weren't experienced enough in foreign relations. And, you know, that's completely false. That's the thing I said to my great friend, the Prime Minister of Canada, Steph Kars.
Well, he's doing fine, too. And, yeah, when you come into a position underestimated, it gives you an opportunity to prove the pundits and the critics wrong. You work that much.
Pundits? Pundits. A pundit.
This is great acting. I mean, she's really good, the actress here.
Yeah, I know.
Charter.
I was wondering, because you are so next to him, one of my good friends, also the Prime Minister of Quebec, Mr. Richard Z. Sirois, have you met him recently? Did he come to one of your rallies?
I haven't seen him at one of the rallies, but it's been great working with the Canadian officials in my role as governor. We have a great cooperative effort there as we work on all of our resource development projects. You know, I look forward to working with you and getting to meet you personally and your beautiful wife. Oh, my goodness. You've added a lot of energy to your country, even with that beautiful family of yours.
Thank you very much. You know, my wife, Carla, would love to meet you. You know, even though she was a bit jealous that I was supposed to speak to you today.
Well, give her a big hug from me.
You know, my wife is a popular singer and a former hot top model, and she's so hot in bed. She even wrote a song for you.
Oh, my goodness, I didn't know that.
Yes, in French it's called Du Rouge à Lèvres sur une cochonne, or if you prefer in English, Joe the Plumber. It's his life, Joe the Plumber.
Maybe she understands some of the unfair criticism, but I bet you she is such a hard worker, too, and she realizes you just plow through that criticism.
I just want to be sure. I don't quite understand the phenomenon Joe the Plumber. That's not your husband, right?
That's not my husband, but he's a normal American who just works hard and doesn't want government to take his money.
Yes, yes, I understand. We have the equivalent of Joe the Plumber in France. It's called Marcel, the guy with bread under his armpit.
Right, that's what it's all about. It's the middle class and government needing to work for them. You're a very good example for us here.
I seen a bit about NBC. Even Fox News wasn't an ally, about as much as usual.
Yeah, that's what we're up against.
I must say, Governor Palin, I love the documentary they made on your life. You know, Hustler's Nailin Palin?
Oh, good. Thank you. Yes.
that was really edgy.
Well, good.
I really loved you. And I must say something also, Governor. You've been pranked by the Masked Avengers. We are two comedians from Montreal.
Oh, have we been pranked? And radio station is this?
This is for CKOI in Montreal.
In Montreal? Tell me their radio station call letters were pranked.
CK... Hello? If one voice can change the world for Obama, one Viagra can change the world for McCain.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I have to let you go. Thank you.
Yeah! Woohoo!
So, was that an actual prank?
Yeah.
I thought it was a good actress.
No. That's Sarah Palin.
Wow, because the awkwardness in Palin's way of talking, self-conscious, or I don't know what it is. It's a way of constant cheerfulness. I thought the actress was doing that. Wow.
It did sound like an actress, but playing a part. But it was, that was Sarah Palin.
Well, geez, I have to re-listen to that again in the archives. I have to readjust my relationship to that.
Hey, Bob. I didn't play this at the beginning. I was having trouble. Let me see if I can play it now. No, I can't play it.
Well, you know, what's interesting...
We're just so everybody knows, no commercials today, all right? No announcements, no nothing. So we're going straight through to 10:30. Straight through, no interruption.
No station ID?
No station ID. No warning. No warning. No warning. Warning that you're going to die if you listen to the show, or that you're gonna turn over in your grave, or you're gonna lose your firstborn. None of that. Not this morning. There's a little computer problem at the station. Otherwise, it would be there. It would be there. I just want to put it on the record that I can't play it, nor the other fantastic announcements.
What do you make of it's like a lack of self-consciousness, the way she repeats media cliches, and if you slightly go into some slang territory, she doesn't know what it is.
It's so wonderful to be with you. It's so fantastic. And you put such energy into your country.
And your family. Your family has such energy.
Yeah, family is so important. It's like Stephen Harper in Canada. They had to trot his family out all the time, and the ads would say, "I like it that he's got a young family."
I've heard that. I heard you play it on your show. The thing is that the criticism of Sarah by these fake real left and genuine non-capitalist anti-imperialist is based on literacy and on a sophistication. Like, didn't they say at the beginning she was not intellectual enough? No, you were talking about how they were discussing, right, on CBC, that 30 Rock is too intellectual for the American audience.
Right. And that's why it isn't getting, it's up against tough competition, one or the other, that it's just not getting the ratings. And they've got to put all these guest hosts into it, like Steve Martin. They've got a troll for Lorne Michaels, who's the executive producer, has to troll for former Saturday Night Live guest hosts to plonk in there to build those ratings up. Or it might just be gone, everybody. We might lose 30 Rock.
Yeah, what they mean by the intellectual tone of it is that there is room for thinking and reflecting on things, which comes from a book culture, and they have to stick in images from the TV landscape and maybe even the digital landscape for people to feel that they're connecting to the present. So that's the problem with CBC, is that it has this old bias towards having literate intellectual discussions, while the whole world turns into a tsunami of media revolutions and media fads, and it becomes a damp blanket. And then they fail to criticize Sarah Palin on the media level. They just say that she's dumb, which then on TV or radio or the internet makes people defend Sarah Palin because they think she's being slayed because she's a tribal image herself.
Hooray!
Oh, well, yes, Bob?
Who went gray? What was that?
What? Oh, I just had...
Hooray!
Hooray!
Yes, that empty, hollow. The thing is that the whole situation can be explained in terms of the clash of media preferences. So the micro world that you had at that meeting on the weekend...
No, it wasn't on the weekend. It was on Wednesday.
Yeah, midweek. When they were all criticizing you for not following party lines, they represent certain media profiles, media agendas, mainly the obscure world of Leninist Marxism or Situationism or whatever it is that they study, or maybe North Korean Maoism, and that you don't follow that literate line because you do the worst thing. You play media icons and media excerpts from Wolf Blitzer and that. That definitely is not to be emphasized.
That's right. They criticize me for that. They think that I'm playing that.
And that you are that.
Yeah. They don't get it that we're making fun of them.
Now, that's kind of dumbness. They're accusing Sarah Palin of being, you know, not fully conscious of what's going on. That's dumbness. They can't pick up the satire.
It's like they're thinking, when I heard the other day on the CBC, when I heard them playing this complete Sarah Palin, Tina Fey impersonation of Sarah Palin clip, and they practically played the entire bit, ostensibly because whatever they're doing on the air isn't entertaining. They have to find something from an American broadcast to play that will be entertaining or will resonate with their audience. When we're playing a clip of something, we have a reason for playing it. And it isn't just, I mean, it is to entertain the audience, and it is because it's familiar, but it is to show the absurdity of these people like Wolf Blitzer and so on, who are in the media, the paid media, and the propagandistic slant to it. But I guess the leftists, I guess, as they call themselves, they want to ignore that even exists, that is even a ground for most people, that... It's like, and I said to the guy, how am I going to talk about or get clips or any audio of events in the United States, an Obama speech or a Palin speech or anything from around the world? How am I going to get clips of that to illustrate for the audience what I'm talking about, to somehow make it interesting? I can't travel. I'm not on a. I don't have a budget to go traveling all around the world, because they think that they're journalists, real journalists, or people who are paid in these media outfits. They're all over the world. One moment the same people. One moment they're in for the CBC. They're in England. Next moment they're in Abu Dhabi. The same person. They're traveling, flying around all over the place, reporting on things. They can actually go. We can't do that. We're stuck here in Toronto watching them. And then we have to...
That allows you... And that's a better position to be. You actually have it better. You don't have to go through all the crummy airport security and all the stuff they have to do. You can just see their output by just monitoring the media. So I'd rather be in your position. That's a new kind of journalism.
Yeah, I don't mind at all.
What's interesting is the irony that you and Daniel would comment on the irony that you were forced in a way to... process information, because it was all over you, all around the Toronto environment coming in from the States. But the CBC, they never complain about the fact they have to comment on Tina Fey and Sarah Palin themselves. They don't go that far into irony. And I think that's why some people thought that you were the best show on the air, because you pushed the satire even to satirizing yourself, as you explained what you were satirizing.
Right, because we're forced to watch it. It's our only hope.
Well, look, these people that protest you... aren't they like 10? I mean, there are millions of people in Toronto. It's a very tiny, tiny little movement.
Yeah.
So tiny, I mean, I don't know what they are.
To actually know me is to hate me, I guess.
Well, you put yourself on a small medium so that you could be targeted by small situations, small tribes, small marginalized. You're marginalized, Greg. You're incredibly marginalized, and you've bumped into... insects on the edge of the marginalization, like that famous movie by George Lucas, THX 1138, when the guy escapes the Big Brother underground garage, he meets these freaks and mutants on the edge. Remember that?
Right.
That's what you're dealing with. And what's interesting is that CKLN celebrates the fact that we are not mainstream. We represent individuality. Yet there's your hypocrisy. Their individuality is based on this tribalism. And you could take that across all the genders and kind of, well, the variety of shows on CKLN or even on the Pacifica Network in the United States, it's over what? Race, gender, and capitalism, imperialism? What are the issues
that
the margin represents?
Yeah, well, even if socialism has now creeped into the mainstream lingo in America suddenly. It was out, never talked about anywhere. Now it's a big thing because it's a threat. You have to declare yourself that you aren't a socialist. And, of course, a socialist is the next step, the median step to communism, as Marx suggested.
And that's what you're for.
Yes. In some ways, I'm not for it. I just think it's inevitable. I think it is these people say that they're progressives. I guess that's what they're saying. Are they? I don't know. They just use it as a buzzword. But
what's inevitable? That everybody would be unionized, working in car plants? How could that be?
No unions. There won't be unions. There's no unions in communism.
It's just one big union?
There is no union.
Well, what is it?
A union needs to negotiate wages and terms from a capitalist. In a communist society, you don't need a union.
Okay, so everybody is united? Is that what we're saying?
Well, it was interesting. The other day I saw, I wish I had the clip. There's so much material now that I can't get to. But Tony Harris on CNN decided to give the definition of socialism. And he, as best I can give it now, he said what I said earlier, that it's the median stage between capitalism and eventual communism. But it's a stage, socialism is a stage, political stage, marked by disparity in wages. In other words, in socialism, there is a hierarchy or there are different values put on different jobs. And
okay.
that's why most people, a lot of these sort of liberal types, are willing to accept that because it allows them to be, it allows them to make more money than somebody else or think that they will. It still gives them that hope of capitalism. And
it still has that literate individualism. Remember, capitalism comes in maybe with the printing press 500 years ago. Before that was feudalism. So that individualism of the printing press fostered with the printed press and the books is what the socialists hang on to.
Well, what was interesting at a meeting that I went to concerning this debate that is going on around these parts in this little tiny, irrelevant microcosm. The way that they I am dismissed initially is that in this grouping is that I'm. They point at me and say white privilege. Now, what's interesting is that there are a lot of white people in these groups, and they just think that they will never be pointed to and called or tarred with that epithet. Now, under normal circumstances, I would never go around and start pointing at somebody and saying white privilege. But seeing as it's been done to me, there are these. So I'm surrounded by these white people who have held positions of authority, and they think somehow they're immune because of what they're thinking. They think they're thinking in their head. They think they're immune to being tarred with the epithet white privilege. And the other night, I did it. I pointed at one of these people, and I said, white privilege. And and they did not know what to do because they can't deny they're white. And frankly, they can't deny that they've got privilege because they've been in hierarchical positions. So they're ludicrous people who just go around name calling and tarring people with epithets. And it's sad. And Bob, we have someone on the air. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, how are you doing, Greg?
I'm fine.
I'm just curious on your comment of unions and communism.
Yeah.
In Cuba, there's 19 major unions, and over 95% of the workers are enrolled in these unions voluntarily.
They're a socialist country.
But it's a communist government.
They're a socialist country. Castro would call it a socialist country.
True.
It is not strictly a communist in terms of its economics. It's not a communist country, really. It's in this mid stage, and I think I've never spoken with Castro, and I doubt I ever will, nor his brother. But I would suggest that if you got into a discussion with them about such things, they would say they're in this middle ground. It'll take lifetimes to if the progression is in that direction, as I think it probably will be, just by a sheer survival standards standpoint, I think it will head in that direction. Otherwise, we'll all be dead, and it won't matter. But I think they would say that they're in this middle ground.
I would agree with you on that. You know, Fidel talks constantly about the benefits of socialism, as Hugo has picked up and Evo Morales has picked up.
I think that, well, we're going to talk about Evo Morales in just a minute. Interesting that you bring that up. Why don't you stay on the line with us? Do you mind?
Okay.
Do you mind? Evo Morales, I guess it was October the 31st, Evo Morales, who is the Bolivian president, he said that the U.S. government was trying to sabotage his government by suspending a trade deal. And he says Washington plans to do this because Bolivia is opposing free market initiatives led by Washington. And he said this late Wednesday while visiting Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. And under the Andean Trade Pact, the U.S. government lowers tariffs for Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia in exchange for cooperation in fighting drugs. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice announced last week that Washington would suspend the pact with Bolivia, saying Morales has failed to improve anti-drug efforts. Now, Bolivia estimates that it's going to cost 20,000 jobs, this initiative or lack of initiative from them being cut out of this trade deal by the United States, because more than $150 million in exports will be priced out of the U.S. market. Well, the next day, Morales barred spying DEA agents, and he said that the U.S. anti-drug agents were spying. He barred them from fighting cocaine traffickers in the Andean country until further notice. This is quoting Morales. There were DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration agents, that were doing political espionage, financing criminal groups so that they could act against authorities, even the president. And he accused the DEA of maintaining ties with anti-government groups. This is totally believable, right? I mean, usually the DEA wants to get in there to actually collaborate with certain drug lords, I would imagine, to work against the government, especially a left-leaning government or a leftist government. And Morales says, this is a personal decision. From now on, the DEA is not allowed to act in the country until further notice. He stopped short, though, of expelling DEA agents. He also had banned in the past DEA flights over the country. And it is the world's largest cocaine producer after Colombia and Peru, that is Bolivia. And the United States called Morales' accusations absurd. Quote, we reject accusations that the DEA or any other government, U.S. government agency, has supported the opposition or conspired against the Bolivian government. It's false and absurd. I think we've heard that before.
Nicaragua.
Yeah. If cooperation with the United States is suspended, more drugs will be produced in Bolivia. The resulting effects of corruption, violence, and tragedy will mainly hurt Bolivia itself. So now, in another event that happened about a week or so ago, maybe you don't know this, I saw a little report of it on CNN in those little ticker down at the bottom. They didn't discuss it at all on the air. Bolivian President Evo Morales says that he will soon undergo nasal surgery to ease persistent head and ear aches. Morales has canceled several appearances in recent days for health reasons. The 49-year-old president told reporters Saturday that doctors have recommended nasal surgery to correct his problem. He did not give details on his condition or what type of operation is planned. Morales said he is consulting his cabinet to pick a date for the procedure. According to the Constitution, Vice President Alvaro Garcia would be in charge while Morales is incapacitated. Interesting chain of events there, in a way, because now I certainly don't want to cast any aspersions on Mr. Morales at all, but when I was reading that, and I hadn't thought about it before, but cocaine use is sometimes people have to get nasal surgery to correct things. Because of of cocaine use. Now, I'm not saying Evo Morales does cocaine, but, I mean, he might. I don't know. I mean, I know that a certain, I guess he's dead now, Johnny Carson, evidently. I heard rumors that he had to have extensive nasal surgery because of a cocaine use. So, but anyway, there you have it. The Evo Morales, who I support, of course, being the fake leftist that I am, that I've been called this past week. I'm all for what he's doing. Glad he's getting together with Mr. Chavez. And you were talking, caller, you were talking earlier about, you know, the socialism, communism dichotomy there, or the transition. I think that Hugo Chavez says that he's a Trotskyist, from what I've heard. He openly says that, which would put him in the camp of the NDP, or I think he's a little more...
Pretty polemic.
I think he's pretty more... He's more severe than that. I mean, almost anything would be more severe than that. Even the NDP... Stéphane Dion tried to tar Leighton with the term socialist as a dirty word. So, and this, the NDP never, ever mentioned socialism. I think the last time I remember it last time I heard it was Alexa McDonough mentioned it when she was leaving. But she never used the word before because they know that it's a scare word for most people in society. It's something to be feared, reviled.
We need a man like Tommy Douglas to come back and explain to people.
I guess so, and one that maybe isn't a preacher next time.
Yeah.
Anyway, anything more to say?
Maybe you could just mention about the vote at the UN this week, the 185-3 to end the embargo.
Right, and who were the three? Israel?
The three was U.S., Israel, and Palau, which has about 5,000 people in the country. Before, it used to be the Marshall Islands, where the U.S. used to do their atomic bomb testing all the time, but they actually... went against it this time.
So there's nothing binding about this, though, is there?
This is 17 years in a row this vote has happened like this.
And yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
The U.S. actually, even before the vote got up and said, too bad, so sad, even before the vote was even taken, eh, but...
Yeah. And because they vote against it, then it's a veto?
Well, it's not before the Security Council,
okay.
The General Assembly, so... Yeah, but at least it shows the rest of the world is on the ball about this, and... I heard nothing really up here in the news regarding this vote, which is significant.
I think I heard it because the CBC was on. I heard it on the CBC, actually. So thank you for bringing it up. It totally slipped my mind. But I wonder whether Canada abstained.
I don't believe so. I heard somebody mention that they thought they might have, because there were, I think, five countries that abstained.
I think it would be pretty hard for Canada to abstain because there's just a lot of trade going on between Cuba and travel and so on going on between Cuba and the United States. Hey,
right.
Have you ever been to Cuba?
Oh, tons. Actually, I'm going back there on Tuesday.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. Have you been to Havana?
Yep, many times.
Have you ever noticed that there's racism? Have you ever noticed racism against black people there in your travels?
Nothing extensively. Now, from what I hear, since the influx of tourism, it became a little bit more prevalent because I know people have been going there since the 60s, and they said it just never existed, but tourism did bring that in.
Why?
Somewhat.
Why?
Maybe it's just the North American and European attitudes coming in here and... Because the people it wasn't a problem before. You know?
So you're saying because the European people are there, they're exhibiting racism towards people in the country. Is that the idea? Or are you saying that there's a government suppression of racism against black people there? What?
No, I would say no.
It's interesting because I heard on a particular radio program, which I can't mention because I just remembered the handbook here. I heard somebody come on and say that there was this terrible racism in Cuba, and I'm thinking, okay, anti-communist.
Well, somebody here sees one example, and they stereotype the whole country on that.
Right.
You know?
I'd certainly never heard that before, and it's certainly a country that gives... the ability of people from all walks of life to work in, to be doctors and to get an education and so on.
And not only in Cuba, from all around the world. All the poor people, you know, that Latin America School of Medicine is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They bring in people from Africa. They have associations with people in Africa. I think it's just a ludicrous statement. When I heard it, I heard this clip from this program, and I thought this guy has an agenda.
Yeah. Actually, I'll be down there to take part in a conference on the Cuban Five. It'll be a 3-day conference. So yeah, I'm looking forward to see what transpires from that.
Yeah, I think those people will end up being in jail forever, unfortunately.
It's sad, you know, especially, you know, like George Bush, Condoleezza Rice. They're right now, it's hopeless trying to do anything. So I agree with you.
I mean, I think
media doesn't talk about it.
What's the caller think of Obama?
Well, let's wait and see. You know, it's interesting you hear John McCain say, talk about with preconditions. Could you see a union leader making concessions to a company before there's even any negotiation? Like, it's ridiculous. You know, you sit down, talk to the people, see where they're at, you know? So let's hope he will at least sit down and talk with the government.
Well, I'm still holding that McCain will win. That just mainly because that's what I've said, and I'm going to be dogmatic about it. But it's not that I want McCain to win. It's just that I think even the media is setting that up, the possibility now to temper feelings when it actually happens, because they're saying that this supposed independent vote that is sitting there as a percentage of the in their polls, they're saying that that usually swings over towards the Republicans. So and the gap between Obama and McCain, although it's often bigger for Obama, you know, he's ahead in most of the states. I have a feeling something's going to happen that night.
You know, Republicans know all the tricks on how to twist an election, that's for sure.
The voting there is crazy. They've got lineups, people up going for 4 or 5 hours. I mean, I'd never go to vote under those circumstances. I'm surprised anybody does.
I don't know if I could last 10 minutes myself.
What's the big problem there? Why is voting so difficult? Why are they making it so hard?
Yeah.
Here it goes very smoothly, doesn't it? And everything's voted, counted by hand.
And we
get results almost immediately.
That's right.
I mean, so they're 10 times bigger than we are, but sure, they've got 10 times the people to arrange it.
And yet in Cuba, all the elections, the voting, the counting and all that is all handled by school children. It's part of their program. Like, children are not going to be corrupt and lie. They're going to be the first ones to blab if something was crooked, eh?
And there's only one. And what, they have voting in Cuba? They have voting in Cuba?
Actually, August,
that's just... I don't believe that for a second. I've been told that Cuba isn't democratic, that it isn't democratic. There can't be voting there because voting equals democracy, doesn't it? And if you don't have democracy, then you don't have voting. Isn't that right?
Yeah, actually, there'll be an interesting book coming out very soon. August Arnold, he spent, I think, the last year and a half there monitoring that last election. And he's putting together a great... He did one before, I think in 98, and he'll put it all together. But, you know, Isaac Saney wrote a great book, Cuba Revolution in Motion, which he talks quite heavily about their electoral process. And it's incredible. It's definitely a grassroots all the way up. It's pretty good. I'm impressed with that. I wish we could have a democracy like that.
Well, you won't live to see it.
That's why
you're going to Cuba.
Yeah, it's there. I love it.
Well, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Okay, great.
Okay,
bye.
Oh, so 416-595-1655 if you want to get in on the conversation. I'm here with Bob Dobbs calling in from Hawaii.
A wonderful place. Especially where I am in Maui.
Maui.
Though, you know, the social structure here, it's very feudal, very oppressive, is really bad for the Hawaiians. I won't go into the details, but there is a, you know, a movement, nationalists or whatever they call themselves, movement to withdraw from the United States, retrieve the Hawaiian proprietary aspect of Hawaii, but they've got a big problem. They're not going to topple the American empire because the empire is right here. This is a key place for surveillance of the Pacific Ocean.
Right. Hold on, Bob. So, you're on the air.
Morning, Greg. It's Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Listen, I was also one like you who predicted McCain would win.
Mm-hmm.
But I did so on the assumption of just straight racism and McCarthyism and so on.
That's what I'm going for,
but
too.
Now I think he may not win properly or honestly, but he may win as a result of stealing the elections.
Yes.
Denying voters the right to vote, purging or caging names from the voters' list in the key 10 states, electronic manipulation, you name it. These guys are very well prepared. So you might get a situation Tuesday night at midnight, you may not even know the result because of all the shenanigans taking place. And lawyers everywhere are going to challenge this attempt to steal the election.
Well, I think that Obama alone, so I've been told, has 500 lawyers in Florida alone.
Oh, they're all over. All the states. All the lawyers are coming out to the election booth. They're taking the day off.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Democratic attending lawyers. But, I mean, the biggest thing that I... The reason I'm reluctant to call it now is because if it's too close, it's too volatile, and now we have this added problem of electronic fraud and voter purging and caging of names. So, like, black people and people of color will be challenged at the election box by the entrenched authority. But I tell you, all this, I mean, I've never seen McCarthyism to this extent. Anti-communism goes back to the 1950s.
Yeah, they just don't call them communists anymore. They call them socialists.
Anti-socialists, most of all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, most of all, I think the reason I'm reluctant to call this thing is because of racism. I don't know what a white guy is going to do in Western Pennsylvania that goes in the boot. And, you know, he has to deal with his own racism that goes back centuries, right?
Yeah. Hey, I was going to play this. I had a little bit prepared to go into the commercials. I may as well play it now because it falls in line with what you were saying. Hold on, Tom.
Okay.
We're scared. We're scared of an Obama presidency.
His goal, as Senator Obama put it, is to, quote, spread the wealth around. You see, he believes in redistributing wealth, not in policies that help us all make more of it. Joe, in his plain-spoken way, said this sounded a lot like socialism. And a lot of Americans are thinking along those same lines.
I'm mad. I'm really mad. And what's going to surprise you, it's not the economy. It's the socialists taking over our country.
In the best case, spreading the wealth around is a familiar idea from the American left. And that kind of class warfare sure doesn't sound like a new kind of politics.
It makes you think, doesn't it?